Welcome to the Focus Today podcast with Perry Atkinson.
Well, welcome to Focus Today. I'm your host, Perry Atkinson, and I am so delighted to have our good friend, Rabbi David Zaslow, with us. He's been a long, long time friend of mine. And I so appreciate this man and his stance and what he does and his commitment and his community service. He is the spiritual leader of Havarah Synagogue in Ashland, just down the road from us. And today at sunset will be the beginning of Passover. And so I look forward to talking to him about that. And you can go to rabbidavidzaslow.com. He does have a website there. Rabbi David Zaslow, ZASLOW.com. David, good to see you, friend. How are you, my buddy?
Oh, thank you so much, Perry. It's really great to see you, too. God bless you. How are you doing?
Good. Doing, you know, it's interesting. I was thinking this morning how long you and I have been friends. And I think, believe it or not, David, it's been over 40 years.
I think so. KDOV is just a little radio station in Ashland. And look at the wonderful things you've grown into and have done for the world. It's wonderful.
Well, look what you're doing, too. Wow, such a time as this. First of all, Passover begins at sundown. Tell us about the significance of this and what you'll be doing this evening.
Well, I'm sure you know, and most of your listeners and viewers know also, the Passover is the Exodus story, and it commemorates 3,300 years ago when the Jews were released from Pharaoh's grip, released from slavery, and began journeying in the wilderness, in the Sinai Peninsula, actually, on the way to the Promised Land. And it took them 40 years to get there, not because it was that far, but because they had a slave mentality, and they were afraid to fight, and they were afraid to enter the land. And it took them 40 years for one generation died, and the next generation under Joshua was strong enough to enter the land. So that's the basic story. And so we commemorate it every year with what we call a Seder. So on the first night and the second night of Passover, which is tonight and tomorrow night, we have Seder's family meals tonight and community meal tomorrow night when we retell the story of the Exodus from Egypt. It's an amazing celebration. We don't eat any bread or any wheat products for the week. Any oats or barley, just to commemorate that we had to leave quickly from Egypt, and all we didn't have time to let the bread rise. So we eat these flatbreads called matzah, and I'm sure many of the viewers have seen them in stores, and they're kind of they're tasteless crackers, but you can put good things on them. You can put peanut butter and jelly and cream cheese on them, but we don't eat wheat for 8 days in order to really remember what happened to our ancestors.
So, as a family, you'll do that tonight, and then tomorrow's a congregation?
Exactly. Tonight, we'll have our grandkids over and family over, and people have their friends over. They have large celebrations in their homes. And then tomorrow night, we have a community Seder as well.
Some other items on the table tonight.
What are the items on the table? Well, the biggest part of the meal, at least from Eastern European Jews, is the matzo ball. So we have matzo ball soup, chicken soup, and all sorts of delicious desserts and things like that that are not made with wheat products. But generally, Jewish cooking depends. You know, Moroccan Jews have Moroccan food, and Jews from Iraq, well, they used to anyway, have great foods from the Middle East. And the American diet is really based very much on Eastern European foods. So we have a really good, really delicious foods tonight. But centering around the matzo ball soup.
So how long is Passover celebrated?
It's an 8-day festival.
Okay, so is there something every day?
No. The main things are that there are prayer services the first 2 days, which would really be tomorrow and the day after in synagogues, the Seder meals in the evening, and then, of course, our Shabbat services Friday and Saturday. But generally not every day celebrating Passover, but every day doing something to remember the Passover. It's very easy to forget the past. And in Judaism, the past informs the present. So by remembering how we got enslaved and how we got free, how with God's strong hand we were freed from slavery, it reminds us how we can get free from our own personal enslavement.
Do you think, David, that there might be a little bit different tone this year to Passover considering what's happening in Israel and even around the world, and even this morning on college campuses in America.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You know, one of the things that we do at a Seder is our children ask these thing called the four questions. And the first question is, why is this night different from all other nights? And really this year, we're going to be saying, why is this Seder different from all other Seders? So in my lifetime, I've never seen or experienced the kind of war we're having between Israel and Gaza right now, let alone the anti-Semitism that's risen up from the earth and is engulfing all our college students and all of us. I mean, you've known me now for 40 years, Perry. Our synagogue was always an open place, and now there are three synagogues in Ashland. We have armed guards there regularly, not just because of the war, the October 7th war, but we have to have armed guards just to guard our services, all sorts of security measures that I never thought we would ever have to have.
As a rabbi, what are you telling your congregation about the war?
Well, you know, we have to, you know, prayer is one thing, but prayer has to be coupled with action. And, you know, Israel is doing absolutely the best they can to end the war quickly, to end Hamas's leadership. Look, the Palestinian people themselves are the greatest victims of this war. They're under the oppression of Hamas and the Palestinian Authority, which is a corrupt organization. So the Palestinian people are really suffering greatly. But what it's doing is it's tainted the region's view of who the Jewish people are and who Israel is. Israel could be and should be the greatest friend to all of these nations, so from Egypt to Jordan, where we have peace treaties, but to all the other nations as well. But they have to give up their tyranny, accept democracy, and accept Israel's right to exist and special partnership that they could have with Israel.
Do you think a two-state solution is off the table for good now?
You know, something I don't think there's any other choice, Perry. We're talking about 7 million Palestinians living in Israel and in the West Bank. We have to live together. There's just no way around it. You can't have a one-state solution. We're not going to join together like the United States, which is multiracial and multi-religious. That's not going to happen there. So what choice is there but a two-state solution? I know that seems naive to certain people, but Israelis are struggling with that question for decades now. Israel has made offers to the Palestinian leadership over the decades and in the late 90s and 2000, 2008, and they've refused a two-state solution all along the way because they don't want to compromise. A two-state solution means Israel will lose a large segment of the West Bank, and Palestinians will lose, you know, their fantasy of from the river to the sea. That's not going to happen. So, Perry, I'm just giving you my personal opinion. I think there's no other choice but a two-state solution.
Given that thought, David, wasn't Gaza a test two-state solution?
No, I don't think Ariel Sharon meant it as a test. He just wanted to say, look, it never was part of historic Israel. It's not our territory. It was never part, biblically, it was always an independent territory. So I don't think it was necessarily a test. But once they became liberated from Israel running the area, then it was seen as a testing ground. Could this possibly work in two states? But Hamas doesn't want two states. A lot of people think that the problem between the Palestinians and Israelis is the occupation in the West Bank. But Hamas doesn't care about the occupation. They're not against the occupation. They're against Israel's existence. So certainly Gaza was seen as a test of the possibility, and certainly it failed, at least on the Hamas's leadership.
What do you think how would you describe, I guess, the relationship between the United States and Israel today?
Well, you know, first of all, it's really unbreakable. Right from the beginning with Harry Truman through Eisenhower, John F. Kennedy, Democrats, Republicans, Ronald Reagan, right to the present, Biden. It doesn't matter what your political position is. Israel and the Palestinians, and the United States have an unbreakable bond. We need each other. Israel certainly needs our country, the United States, and the United States needs a good ally, a democratic ally in the Middle East. So, yeah, it gets tense once in a while. It's always been a tense relationship because Israelis they're very independent. They know what they're doing from their security needs. And sometimes in the United States, we try to impose what we think they should be doing. But still, the bond is the disagreements are between two nations that really, really respect each other deeply.
Why is anti-Semitism not considered racism?
Well, it's not racism per se, because, of course, Judaism is not a race, but it's definitely a form of a profound prejudice. It's an age-old prejudice against the Jews. So it's like racism, and it's certainly an irrational hatred of the Jews, an irrational portrayal of the Jews having power, controlling the media, all those conspiracy theories, and scapegoating. In other words, there's not peace in the world. Whose fault is it? It's Israel's fault, or it's the Jews' fault.
How are you handling that?
How what? I'm sorry.
How are you handling the rise of anti-Semitism?
Oh, it's very, very challenging. First of all, through prayer, through my connection to God. That's where my hope is, right? We sing HaTikvah as the national anthem of Israel, and I have great hope that God knows what God knows what he's doing. I don't know what he's doing sometimes. So the first thing is I hand it over to God on a personal level. And once I'm free from that, then I can begin to teach our congregation how to have hope in our own future, how to release ourselves from our own anger, how to free ourselves from our own inner bondage, our frustrations and our fears. So when there's anti-Semitism, just like, for example, as I said before, 7 years ago, for the first time, we started hiring armed guards. Can you believe that, Perry?
No.
Three synagogues in Ashland all have to have armed guards every time we do a service. It's terrible. So internally, it's hard for me to handle unless I go into prayer and go into a sense of that we're not doing this alone, that God, we need your help.
How's your congregation handling it?
Well, the same way. First of all, you know, it's hard to be Jewish in the world because of the anti-Semitism. Now, in Southern Oregon, it's not like it is at Columbia University or in the big universities in the big urban areas where there's tremendous amount of overt hatred of the Jews. And there certainly is in Southern Oregon to a degree, but I'm handling it pretty well. But I'm not in the testing ground. I'm not in Israel. I mean, that's really where the test is, to show you how hard it is to be Jewish or an Israeli. And also to be a non-Jewish citizen. Don't forget, 20% of the citizens of Israel are not Jewish. Mm-hmm. 80% are Jewish, 20% are either Palestinian Muslim or Palestinian Christian.
So, David, do you think Israel is poised to completely wipe out Hamas?
Boy, you know, you can't wipe out an ideology, but you can wipe out the leadership of that ideology. Look what happened after World War II. Our two greatest enemies, Shinto Japan and Nazi Germany, within 5 years after the war, started becoming our best friends. Now Japan and Germany are the closest allies to the United States. Why? Because the leadership in Japan and the leadership in Germany were wiped out, leaving them to be democratic countries, which, you know, are always more moderate. You know, they're free to elect their leaders. So that's my hope for the Palestinians, is that they get a good, strong leadership that supports Western-style democracy and then makes a peace treaty with Israel. I mean, that's the real hope. Wiping out Hamas, I don't think you can wipe out the ideology behind Hamas, but you can definitely give the people hope that the people get a choice to have a free country of their own. And that's going to be up to them to fight for their own freedom, just like the United States did in the American Revolution.
That's a good point. How are young people within your synagogue or the other synagogues there in Ashland, how do you think they are processing not only the anti-Semitism, but the actual war itself?
It's very confusing from here because we get such, the media gives us only one view of the war. And so we're processing it. Look, we're small people. There are 2 billion Christians in the world, 1 billion Muslims in the world. There's only 16 million Jews in the whole world. So our young people are, you know, we're defensive. We're afraid when we hear about anti-Semitism in urban areas or on college campuses. So processing it is very difficult, including the war. Most of the people that I know are not trying to give Israel advice and tell them how they should prosecute the war. Most of the young people and adults that I know are supportive of Israel and supportive of their effort not to hurt the Palestinian people, not to hurt the people in Gaza, but to wipe out the leadership of Hamas.
One last question, David. Again, thank you for your time on this very big day and recognizing day. Yeah. Do you feel that the Jews still see Christians as an ally?
Do I think the Jews see Christians as an ally?
Yes.
Well, there's different kinds of Christians. American Christians, evangelical Christians, absolutely.
Okay.
There's certainly some churches that are not very friendly to the Jewish people,
right,
in different parts of the world, certainly in Latin America and in parts of Africa. So Christianity is a big, it's a big term. But certainly in America and in Europe, evangelical Christians have been great allies to the Jewish people and to Israel.
Thank you for clarifying that. Let me say to our viewers and listeners, you can go to RabbiDavidZaslow.com. There's the picture of his landing page. You can correspond with him there. Pray for him and his congregation over this next 8 days, especially in their homes tonight and then together tomorrow in their places of worship. And I keep forgetting, David, and I'm sorry, but I forgot the last time we were together. You keep reminding us that it's a new day where you have to have armed guards at your synagogue's door. I can't explain it. I don't know how you deal with it.
Yeah, it's challenging. Thank God the armed guards are wonderful people, and they're good greeters. They're kind and they're strong. It's just sad we have to have all the alarm systems. Look, we just got a grant from the government to fortify our building, you know, and so our building is security cameras and lighting and the guards and things like that. We have to change our windows, and it's a tragedy, but we just have to hope for the future and do the best we can along the way.
Good to see you, friend. RabbiDavidZaslow.com is the website. You and your family, be blessed tonight, and let's stay connected. Please know you remain in our prayers.
Thank you. God bless you, Perry.
Thank you for listening to this week's Focus Today podcast. Remember, you can visit our website to check out all the interviews we did this week on our daily Focus Today TV show at thedove.us. And if you like this podcast, please take a moment to rate us and share it with your friends.